ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
As we move into the home stretch of the presidential election, the political rhetoric is heating up, especially in a battleground state like Wisconsin. Now, while we can all switch the channel or turn off the TV when we have our fill of political advertising, it's not easy knowing how to handle those uncomfortable moments when we're face-to-face with someone that we disagree with. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk about how we can become more civil in our political discourse. Our guest is Bill Keith, a professor of English at UWM, who's the co-author of a new book called Beyond Civility, The Competing Obligations of Citizenship. Welcome, Bill. It's good to have you on today's program.
Hi, Tom. It's good to be here.
Bill, as polarized as certainly our state is and the entire country, can we really find our way to civility when we talk about politics?
I believe that we can. I believe we can if we decide that we want to, but there's a lot of things working against it. Part of, I think, what we all have to see is that the problems we have with civility are systemic, right? So there's a lot of reinforcing loops in our society that keep people yelling at each other and keep people being hateful with each other. And this is not a new insight, but obviously social media seems to bring out the worst in people, right? Social media is a business. It's a business that runs on clicks. When you click something, when you like something, when you click through, when you retweet, somebody makes money. And what are the things that make you most likely to click? Well, either you're buying something or you're angry at something. And so aside from commerce, it's really anger that sells. When you look at the more traditional media and the way they cover politics, what is easier to get people to watch? People yelling at each other, excitement and drama, turning the presidential campaign into a Real Housewives episode? Or is it people calmly discussing their differences and working through real and deep policy disagreements? Obviously, Real Housewives has better ratings than any other show. So a lot of news shows have turned themselves into drama shows for this reason, right? And of course, there's a vested interest in the media in making the presidential campaign appear to be a horse race. And so anytime it looks like it's getting non-competitive, then there's a reframing to show that actually, well, each person has a chance and this is what it is. So the real problem, though, is not that this is forced on us, but that we not only accept it, but we kind of demand it. And by we, I mean the American public. Fox News, if you don't like it, that's fine, but it couldn't exist unless there was a really strong public out there that wanted it to exist. Without the consumers of it, these things don't happen. And so if we are going to change the tone, if we're going to bring down the temperature, it's probably got to come from the bottom up, which is going to push back against these larger forces that seem to hold the whole thing in place.
And yet it's so addictive, isn't it, when you tune in your favorite channel, because they're giving you information that reinforces your predisposition. It's tough to say, nope, I'm not going to have any of that today.
It is exhausting to stay angry, and yet somehow people find it deeply satisfying to stay angry, right? And the thing is, there's exhausting of being angry. There's that part. But there's also what's frightening or difficult or uncomfortable about deciding not to be angry and to actually engage people, right, who are deeply different from you. And there's a lot to be said about difference, because all differences aren't made the same. But turning away from just being angry at people is difficult. So as we move toward the presidential election, there's a whole thing in the media about will Trump supporters accept a Biden presidency? Will they acknowledge the legitimacy of his election at some point? And there's a lot of angry talk about, well, how dare they not? Well, how many people after Trump was elected said, Trump is not my president. I will never acknowledge him as my president. well, I acknowledge your feelings that way, that you were super angry at him. But on the other hand, doesn't that kind of talk create the ground for the very thing that you're afraid is going to happen after when Biden is elected? Right. So everybody is preparing the context for incivility. And so, and this is to a little right, to a certain extent, I'm stepping back from who's right and who's wrong here. It's not so much about that. It's about, can we even talk about that or not? And so the basic thesis of our book is that people need to step back. The deal is, can you really be so angry and hateful at people if you know them and like them and love them? Probably not. And you read in the media all the time stories of families that are broken up by, you know, somebody watched Fox News or somebody declared they were going to vote for Biden or declared that they were anti-Trump or something like this, and people stop speaking to each other. Like, these commitments become more important than the relationships that define our lives. How have we let that come to pass? The solution, in a certain sense, is looking at relationships, looking at communication and relationships. Democracy really, it is a series of institutions. It is, we value these institutions, we want them to work, but they're based on people having a certain kind of relationship to each other. Right? So the rhetoric of democracy isn't just, you know, a certain set of arguments or a style of talking. It is the willingness to engage other people as equals over disagreements, right? You know, and to honestly listen and engage them.
You know, you talk about families that have seen a schism, a split, because there's one person on the left and another person on the right, and they just can't find a way to go ahead and engage in that conversation. And so they stop talking. Or I just, from what I've seen in my own personal life, you try to avoid that topic at all. You skirt around it, and you're, there's almost a sense of dread sometimes with a friend who may be on the opposite end of the political spectrum, that it's going to come up when you really know it's so much safer to talk about the weather or about the kids or about, you know, how are you doing with COVID? That's not healthy either, though, is it, to just avoid the conversation and pretend that there is no elephant in the room? There is no big difference between the two of us.
So this is the thing that we call mere civility or weak civility, right? So in any society that's large and diverse as ours is, most people don't agree with you about most things. People have different tastes in music, different tastes in foods, the jobs they value, the kind of recreational activities. Everything is different. Do we have to agree on this? Do we all have to, does there have to be a common ground of things we all agree on? Well, not really exactly. So in our public face with people, typically we manage all those differences by saying, yeah, that's fine. I don't need to make you like the music that I like. You don't need to make me like the music that you like. Now, sometimes you do have a relationship with somebody where you can actually engage that, and somebody says, you know, you just don't appreciate reggae enough, and I am going to play some things for you and talk to you about it and see if I can make some headway with that. And if I like the person enough and I trust them and we actually have a bunch of musical tastes in common, I may be willing to go down that road. There's no guarantee about where it will end, but I'm willing to go down that road. But that isn't the normal thing. We don't normally have to challenge each other about everything. Our question is weak civility actually working against the social change that we want? So the big picture of this book, Beyond Civility, is beyond mere civility to something that will actually engage social change. And of course, people have different ideas about what social change is, where it should go. But we have to have some kind of set of behaviors and norms that engage differences in a way that both deepen a sense of community and over time help people move forward in various ways. So the problem with strong civility is it is based in a certain kind of relationship and the skill of developing that relationship. And right now, that is the skill that's kind of missing, right? What people are really good at is being hateful to each other, right? And one of the things that the so-called culture wars have brought up is that basically everything is now a token of politics. If you wear the wrong color hat, oh, you're one of those people. And then the stereotypes fly out and the hatefulness flies out and no dialogue is actually going to happen, right? So the question is, can we create relationships? And when I say public relationships, what I mean is about public affairs. They may be with people we're related to. But can we talk to people about public issues in a way that tolerates disagreement, that uses evidence and argument, and allows us to actually find out what would be a way forward? And so our idea of strong civility is, how do we develop the skills to create those relationships? There was a great quotation about 2 years ago. Larry Wilmore, the broadcaster, he had a television show called The Nightly Show. Then they canceled that right during the last presidential election. And his podcast called Black on the Air. And in the middle of something, about a year and a half ago, he said this: civility isn't just being nice. It isn't just showing manners. Civility is coming together as civil society and making people uncomfortable and doing the right thing and yelling at people who are not doing the right thing when you have to. And that seems like a sort of a key insight, is that strong civility, radical civility, pushes you to challenge people. But you can only challenge people if you have a sufficient relationship with them that they can tolerate that. So that's the tension that we really struggle with. It's way easier just to step back, have zero relationship as you do online, and post mean things on Facebook and send out angry tweets and all the things that people do all day long.
Using that theory of moving beyond civility, should we be trying to persuade people whom we disagree with that we're right and they're wrong, or should you try more to listen and learn why they feel they have the convictions that they do?
At this point, I think persuasion might be an outcome of dialogue and engagement, but it doesn't look like anybody's particularly persuadable right now. And in fact, for most people, if you say, I'm going to persuade you, that means that you never will, right? I mean, and persuasion, if you think about it, is something that's unilateral. It's something that I do to you or you do to me. Now, it may be that if we have a conversation and it's a real engaged conversation where we both allow ourselves to be somewhat vulnerable and we talk about the things that really matter and we find and construct some shared spaces and some other places of disagreement, I may come to be persuaded in the process of that, that there's more validity to your point of view than I originally gave you. I may come to understand it as a completely different point of view. Oh, so it really wasn't about this, it was about that. That may happen. But the idea of persuasion, as it's typically taken in the media, you know, all these ads and all this stuff that people do, it doesn't seem to have much of a difference. In fact, negative advertising, the main effect of negative advertising is not to actually persuade people, it's to make people so disgusted they walk away from politics. It's a form of voter suppression.
And in some cases, it also helps to fuel the base or solidify the base if you are just looping and playing that loop over and over of what people have come to expect from their candidate or from their party. What happens when you approach a person with that desire to be civil in your discourse, to be radically civil in your discourse, and that you really want to listen to them, and they have no interest at all in hearing your side of the story? I mean, is there a way to convince a person at least that they should pause and give you a chance to make your case or talk about the differences that you have? What happens when you run into that brick wall of someone who says, resolutely, I'm right, you're wrong?
So at that point, I clearly don't have the relationship, credibility, or credentials to begin that conversation, right? I mean, I don't think in a zero history relationship, you can just start out by doing that. And I would also start out by hearing their story. What is it they think is going on? Right? Because in many cases, so for example, when I feel like someone is saying something that I think is racist, or they're taking a position that I think is racist, if I ask them to explain it to me, typically in their mind, it doesn't turn out to be about race at all. And so if we have a long conversation and I'm like, well, actually, those things are actually connected to race in these ways, frequently the person will go, okay, so I can see how you would think that. Did they change their mind on that on the spot? No. Most people don't change their mind radically on the spot anyway. That's a very unusual thing. People do it gradually and over time in the context of conversations and relationships. So what I can hope for is I made that person alert and aware to wow, there's issues about race in the world in places where I never looked for them. And then they're hearing things differently from then on. And sometimes they come back to me and go, you know, now that I'm looking at it this way, I see it all over the place. Okay. And then this becomes an ongoing conversation. So from the point of view of electoral politics, of persuading to capture a vote, this is a non-starter, right? They don't want that. They'll use ads and anger and the rest of this stuff. From the point of view of how we move forward as a country and how we create a we out of it, since there are people actually talking about the two Americas now, that I think is the slow, steady stuff is the only way forward.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us on today's program is Bill Keith. Bill's professor of English at UWM's College of Letters and Science and the co-author of a new book called Beyond Civility, The Competing Obligations of Citizenship. We're talking about how to be civil, not just polite, but civil to each other when we have these sometimes very emotional and very challenging conversations about politics. And certainly at this time of year, as we're just a few weeks away from the November presidential election, more civility would certainly be welcome in most of our lives. Bill, you talked earlier about the role that the media plays in helping to shape the way in which we behave, not just the way that we feel about a topic, but how we act when we're around other people. I've got a friend who happens to be liberal, but says, you know, I really want to understand where people on the other side of the aisle are coming from. So he said, I force myself to watch programs that I otherwise never would have watched. And he said, you know, I appreciate the fact that they're coming at this from an entirely different place. And he said, are they convincing me? No, but at least I get a better idea of where they're coming from. But he said, it's the anger that I can't stand. He said, if it was just the idea that they disagree with me on policy, I could get that. But he said, from his standpoint, it's just too burdensome to go into that maw of media narrative that doesn't allow for anything but a pure thought to exist. What is there a way that we can get media to back off as a country, collectively as a society, and say, stop, look what you're doing to us? You know, we should be finding ways in which we can create bridges instead of these walls. What advice would you give?
Only if they stop making money from doing this, right? So the thing is, if people, you know, large numbers of people decisively said, we're not going to consume this anymore, right? If your news programs are programs of rage and condemnation, we're not interested anymore. That is not happening, but if that did happen, that would be a change to that system. So probably the change has to come from other places, right? And so there are a lot of people actually sort of working on this, and there have been, and I think that their efforts are even more relevant now. So there's a new book called The Politics of Loneliness, where the author talks about inclusive democracy, right? So the sort of micro-interactional politics that keep people into it. And part of it is a lot of people are so, right, there's this concept of emotional labor. Like, if I want to talk to you about this, I have to deal with your rage. And people just don't want to put in the effort. So how do we create the ability to have limited conversations without so much rage? And some people are really capable of doing this. And some people whose views are extremely different from mine, I've had really great conversations that we agree to disagree, but we get deeper into it. And we actually like and respect each other better, even though we don't agree more. And that becomes a place for me to push off to challenge certain kinds of things. But so there are organizations. How do you bring people together? There's something called the National Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation, the ncdd.org, and that is an umbrella group for hundreds of local groups across the country that bring people together to sponsor meaningful dialogue. And sometimes it's about specific issues like environmental issues or educational issues. Sometimes it's just in general, get communities talking to each other and having a sense of community. Here in Wisconsin, we have WIPS, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, that comes out of Wausau and is connected to UW-Wausau. And this is a local group doing this work, and they have, since COVID, been sponsoring a video series called Two Bald Guys, based on the guys that are leading it. And I just got an email before this program started. They're doing one on how can we vote safely. And so they're going to come together and have a lot of people in an online environment and take questions and have a discussion about what voting means and what safely means. There's a national group called Braver Angels. So it was originally called Better Angels after Abraham Lincoln's The Better Angels of Our Nature. But they decided that this was so hard, they needed to call themselves Braver Angels. And they're organized on red and blue, so left and right, you know, how Americans divide things up. And all the way through the structure of their organization, from top to bottom, everything involves people from both sides, right? So there really can be no sense that this is really an X or a Y kind of group, a red or a blue group. It's both. And what they do is they kind of practice talking about things without stereotyping, without reducing people to extreme positions, without using the language that provokes people. And they try to talk through things without doing that to each other and see how far they get. And they all find it difficult, but extremely rewarding. It isn't exactly persuasive, but they feel very empowered by doing it. And then even internationally, there's a newspaper in Germany sponsored something called Deutschland spricht, Germany Speaks, in which they all across the country, they brought together pairs and small groups of people just to agree to converse on multiple occasions and then write up or talk about, like, what were your feelings about doing this? And based on the success of it, there's now something called My Country Talks. You can go to mycountrytalks.org, which internationally, lots of countries are doing this, and people are trying to do it actually across national borders. So the question is, if you try to do it from the bottom up, it would be kind of an educational process. Obviously, the will would have to be there. There is something easier about, okay, I don't have to think about this. All the people who disagree with me are horrible, terrible people. They should be shunned completely. They're not real Americans. Like, that is, in a certain sense, easy. In a certain sense, it's hard because it's emotionally exhausting. Even for people who think they enjoy it, it's exhausting. And also, it isn't making progress. We are not solving policy issues. If the COVID episode has taught us anything, we do need to do a better job as a country of coming together to address challenges that face us all that aren't really partisan challenges. And yet somehow COVID got sucked into the partisan challenge. The wildfires are getting sucked in as a partisan challenge. And that means that money is lost, lives are lost, we become less as a country.
It seems like the hardest part of starting that civil conversation is being willing to take the time and the energy to open the door, to look at someone who's on the opposite side of the political aisle and say, I like you, I'd like to understand you better. Or can we have a conversation where we don't get angry? Is that a way to open the door to this meaningful civility?
It is, but of course, is it just any old person on the opposite side, or is it somebody you already have a relationship with? So I think the thing that we want to emphasize is strong civility is building those relationships and sort of acknowledging disagreement as part of those relationships. Yes, we strongly disagree about this, but we can still like and respect each other, right? And this, actually, I have to say, if you go back to the TV show Parks and Recreation, they did a great job between the two main characters, Leslie Knope and Ron Swanson. You know, they're represented as ideologically different, but as they work together, their respect for each other grows and their willingness to give credence to and to work with the other person's point of view and acknowledge the situations in which it's right. A huge part of this is coming down from abstractions. Trumpers are this, liberals are that, and coming down to specifics. What about our schools? So get rid of the ideology and, like, what is the problem and how do we make some progress on this? The more that we talk to people about specifics instead of abstractions, the easier it is to get to this place where we can see something that's common. I don't think the common ground is something that pre-exists or that we have to have. It's something that we build and rebuild on a regular basis as we interact with people. So if we look at this as a creative thing, I don't yet know what it's going to look like, but I'm going to engage this person and find out. That is where I think it really begins. But I think it has to begin with thinking about where are the relationships that can tolerate this? How do I build those relationships with people so that they feel respected enough by me that they're willing to engage me?
Does a person's education or their age impact how capable they will be to have that civil conversation?
I haven't particularly noticed that. I think lots of people on all walks of life in society can respect other people. They can respect differences. I think there are lots and lots of people who are just tired of the way that we're doing things now. They just don't see an out, right? And because so much in the media, so much in their social media life, so much revolves around this cycle of recrimination and retaliation, they have a hard time breaking out. But I think that they would like to. I think you can have this conversation with just about anybody if they've decided that they're willing to do it.
How about you? Are you optimistic that we can turn the corner here and a year from now or 4 years from now be in a better place?
Well, you know what they say, you have to hit bottom before you can start up again. I think that the post-election period, regardless of who wins the election, will be extremely challenging. And I think people are going to need to make a decision that the last 4 years cannot be the next 4 years.
And so that means being willing to at least crack the door, right? And look at a person you love but disagree with and say, let's talk. I'm not going to try to convince you. I just want to understand you. Is that a fair opening?
It is, absolutely. The only way to change a pattern is just to do something different. And so think about the way that you typically talk to people about politics, the way you engage them, the stance that you take. Are you open? Are you condemning? Are you condescending to them? Can you do something different? What would it look like to treat them differently?
Boy, it would sure be nice to have a lot of those conversations take the place of the anger and the bomb throwing that currently is going on.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate the chance to talk about this today on the radio. And I hope people who are listening can follow up some of the sources and maybe get connected to people, to groups, in their local area.
Well, and also read your book, Bill Keith's book, co-author of the book Beyond Civility, The Competing Obligations of Citizenship. Bill, thanks so much for a fascinating conversation today. And let's keep hope alive that we can all talk to each other in a kinder, gentler way going forward.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Bill Keith, professor of English at UWM, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. Thanks for taking some time to hear about the people and the great ideas that we have coming out of the university every day. If you would like, you can listen to this program and other programs anytime you wish. Just go to the UWM.com website and look for the UWM Today program. And this and all of our previous programs are available for listening in the future at your convenience. That's all for this week. Take care, everybody. Be civil to each other. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.